This morning I want to talk about knowing. We know so little about healing. That was a statement my mother made to me when I was 16 years old. She was a registered nurse with years of experience, and she was describing to me that was her response to my question why somebody who had been diagnosed with terminal cancer 30 days before looked so fantastic when I saw him. Instead of looking like a man dying, which is what he was basically told to do, they opened him up, saw he was filled with cancer, closed him up, and sent him home to die, and he looked fantastic. "We know so little about healing," she said. I already knew that people who claimed to know a lot of stuff didn't necessarily know a lot of stuff. I knew from my own experience in my family that being smart or intelligent or even brilliant didn't guarantee that what you knew was true. When I was 6 years old, I started to get educated into that reality that people will say stuff as if it's true, but it's not true. I came home from catechism at 6 years old crying. And my mother asked me why, and I explained to her that I had just found out that my best friends, David, Harry, and Leroy, were all going to hell because they weren't Catholics. I knew other stuff that wasn't true. When I was 10 years old, we're getting ready for church, my older brother John and I, one Sunday morning, and he tells me that we're not actually going to Mass, but in fact are going to go down to the docks in our hometown and look at the boats and talk. In panic, I needed his assurances that, number one, I wasn't going to incur a mortal sin and die and go to hell, which, as everybody knew, that's what would happen if you missed Sunday Mass. John, 2 years my elder, assured me that that was nonsense. It was a control device to scare and herd people into church on Sundays, and it would be okay. Number one, we weren't going to die. Number two, if even we died, we wouldn't have consigned ourselves to hell. He told me a different truth. I became convinced that day, sitting on the dock's feet dangling over the edge, looking at the boats, the water, what things had been created, the beauty associated with that, not only the beautiful blue sky and clouds and sunshine and the warmth of that summer day, but that relationship of discussing hopes and aspirations with my 12-year-old brother was one of the, and maybe one of the very few times I actually ever attended church. That communing with my brother John and hopes and dreams were much more godlike than anything that I had experienced up to that point. There is a lot more to know than we know. Sometimes people know things and it's unusual. For instance, my oldest sister, Daphne, could answer the telephone when she was a young girl before it rang, and she could begin an appropriate conversation with the caller before the caller had a chance to introduce himself or herself. She knew stuff that people were told you couldn't know. So around our dinner table, topics such as spirit, God, the invisible, angels, and so on, were regularly discussed. Extrasensory perception, ESP, was a normal way to know things before it was possible to physically know them, according to common understanding. And we were talking about ESP when scientists were trying to devise ways to find out if ESP even existed. We were seeing it demonstrated, and they're wondering if it's existing. If there are invisible worlds and realms to know, how could we come to know them? How could we gain knowing? My mother, my second older sister, Mary, and my youngest sister, Anne, introduced me to automatic writing in the summer of 1969. I was on leave from the U.S. Army, and I was home, and these three devout Catholic women tried one evening to use a Ouija board to answer some of their own questions, to do a bit of exploration. The writing device, that's the planchette, instead of writing letter by letter, started to write longhand. My mother and sisters quickly added a pen and plain paper underneath it, and all of a sudden, answers in longhand were being written in response to questions that they were asking. Whenever any two people touched a planchette, it would respond to questions, except when I was one of the people touching the planchette. When I touched it, it wouldn't budge. So I became the official question asker. And we explored all kinds of things. My sisters would say, ask about this and ask about that. And then I would formulate an unequivocal question. And things of, who are we speaking to? Are you good? Tell us about God. Are there angels? How did you get to be Mary's guide? Tell us about life, death, heaven, hell, destiny, life purposes, our future possibilities. Tell us about our parents. Tell us about our children. And what about George in Vietnam in the U.S. Marines? All kinds of answers and all kinds of questions were bouncing back and forth. But no answers would come when we asked about George, if my mother was sitting at the table. When she left the room, the answers would spill out of the pen. We are doing our all to protect him. Yes, the water from Fatima that your mother sent him is helping. Even as I write these words this morning, tears of gratitude start to flow because George returned safely from Vietnam despite multiple freak occurrences and near misses. In the early spring of 1970, my mother gifted me a book on the life of Edgar Cayce, the Sleeping Prophet. Edgar Cayce was a person who, when he was awake during the daytime, was fairly uneducated and didn't know much. But when he went into the trance state, when he fell asleep in the daytime, he knew amazing things about people, illnesses, history, Jesus, life, and death that were unknowable otherwise. He could diagnose conditions of people who were on the other side of the world and prescribe treatment for those conditions. He knew stuff that was unknowable. In the early months of 2008, I heard about a man named Walter Russell. Walter Russell died after a long, successful life here in America, and he had been called a martyr in Leonardo da Vinci because, even though he only had a formal education up to the third grade, Walter Russell used to go to God for knowledge. Not for information, for knowledge. He would go into a meditative state, go to the source of all knowledge, see and learn, and then return to a normal waking state to implement what he saw and now knew to be true. Russell, as a result, was world famous in a variety of areas. He was world famous as a painter, sculptor, philosopher, writer, speaker, real estate developer. Can you believe this? He, in one of these journeys to the source of all knowledge, saw the concept of cooperative housing. He is the one that developed the concept of co-ops in real estate because he saw it when he went to the source of all knowledge. When he came back and said, I want to do this, I want to develop real estate in New York City, this is how I want to do it, the bankers, the lawyers, the real estate people, all told him it was impossible to do. It couldn't work. He says, of course it's possible. I already saw it. And it became very successful. He feels as though once things started to get out of balance because of greed, the original purpose and concept of cooperative housing was polluted to a large extent. by bankers and real estate people just out of a pure sense of greed. Walter Russell also was famous in music and science, figure skating. He literally put figure skating on the map in the United States. He's the real impetus behind that becoming popular in the U.S., and horsemanship. Walter Russell proved there is a source of knowledge, and that we connect to both the source and to the knowledge. In the early 1990s, I had a mentor who said, "It is not what you don't know that is the problem. The problem is that a lot of what you do know is not so." In other words, we believe false things to be true. I go back to that 6-year-old experience of hearing, quotes, the truth, end quotes, that my best friends were doomed to hell because they weren't Catholic. Fortunately, my mother ripped those lies up by the roots before they could deeply embed themselves in my way of thinking, my subconscious mind, my view of life. I was certain that her version was true because she put a coat on and marched down to the church and set them straight on what they could and could not teach her children if they ever wanted to see another Costello in church. People in authority and the media and business make up ideas or models like ads, these images. They get public approval from other authority figures and then make it, quotes, truth, and repeat it over and over and over again. The timelines of history are dotted with events when more accurate information and knowledge were all viciously squashed, stamped out, tortured, and killed because they threatened the status quo of power and profits. The same battle for power and profits is going on in every corner of the world today. Flip on the news at 6 o'clock. I don't normally recommend that. Or look at the front page of the paper. I don't recommend that usually either. But nowhere is this battle more obvious than in the halls and troughs of Washington, D.C., where pigs of different political persuasions battle for the best places at the troughs of power, influence, and money, in order to gorge themselves and their parties, all at the same time of pretending they're doing it for us, the citizens. The politics of medicine and illness are the same. Illness is a trough that belongs exclusively to selected groups. No one else can get to that trough. It's against the law in the U.S. And in fact, whenever possible, no other troughs are allowed to be set up. If you think that's overdramatic, think of chiropractic when it was trying to get a foothold as a legitimate treatment for physical and other types of problem. Traditional medical establishment did everything possible to squash it. They didn't succeed, fortunately, but that battle with nutrition and vitamins and alternative health goes on even as I speak. There are experts in every subject who claim that the theories that are being put forth to explain phenomena ranging from gravity to swine flu are frauds perpetuated for the purposes of power and profits. We now know that by, quotes, following the money, end quotes, we can know that a lot of what is being told to us is not so. The politician who declares that he is voting for the benefit of his constituency, while secretly aligning himself in opposition to them because he's been bribed by the big money interests, is a blatant example of people working to distort our awareness so we can't tell the difference between falsehood and truth. Asking questions opens the door to knowing. When we ask a constructive question, we attract constructive energy in response. Doesn't it seem that when we dig deeper into a problem that we end up with more problems? But on the other hand, when we get more into the solution and we ask about solutions, when we explore for solutions, we encounter more solutions. Our chances of discovering peace and joy, kindness and happiness are greater when we ask questions about peace and joy, kindness and happiness, how we can multiply those energies and experiences, and about our relationship with each of these vibrations. We open the door to knowing when we ask questions. We can know more. We can know more. That seems so simple. It seems so direct. It seems so obvious. But it's not to many people. A lot of people have been encouraged not to think for themselves, not to know more, not to explore, not to consider new ideas, and in fact, protect themselves from new ideas, new thoughts, new age, new experiences. But on the other hand, we have been encouraged for years and years and years, centuries, millennia, to know more. The truth will set you free. Seek first the kingdom of heaven, or obvious examples. There are a lot more. If we're going to follow those directions, seek first the kingdom of heaven, we go like, what is the kingdom of heaven? What is it? Where is it? And if we can figure that out, how do we achieve it? And this, I think, is an area where we can make a decision for ourselves. Isn't the kingdom of heaven the point of connection in us, between us and God? Is that kingdom of heaven the potential for God to work through us that Jesus spoke of and demonstrated that he could do because the Father was working through him, and that we could do that and even more? I personally know from experience that just because the invisible isn't easy to see doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. The invisible exists, and so do energies in the invisible. Just because we know so little about healing, just because there's more power and profit on a material basis in treatment and research of diseases, just because the fear of not yet known scares us, we can still know more. We can know for ourselves what the healing spirit is. We can know how to more fully connect to it. We can know how to use this energy, much like our ancestors first learned how to use the energy of fire. I'm going to read from the Aquarian Gospel of Jesus the Christ, chapter 92, verse 1. Now Lazarus was at the feast, and Jesus and the 12 went with him to his home in Bethany. And Lazarus and his sisters made a feast for Jesus and the 12. And Ruth and Asher came from Jericho, for Asher was no longer hostile to the Christ. And while the guests sat at the board, behold a cry, "The village is afire!" And all rushed out into the streets, and lo, the homes of many neighbors were in flames. And in an upper room an infant lay asleep, and none could pass the flames to save. The mother, wild with grief, was calling on the men to save her child. And then, with a voice that made the spirits of the fire pale and tremble, Jesus said, "Peace, peace, be still." And then he walked through the smoke and the flame, climbed up the falling stair, and in a moment came again, and in his arms he brought the child, and not a trace of fire was on himself, his raiment, or the child. Then Jesus raised his hand, rebuked the spirits of the fire, commanding them to cease their awful work and be at rest. And then, as though the waters of the sea were all at once poured on the flames, the fire ceased to burn. And when the fury of the fire was spent, the multitudes were wild to see the man who could control the fire. And Jesus said, "Man was not made for fire, but fire was made for man." When man comes to himself and comprehends the fact that he is Son of God and knows that in himself lie all the powers of God, he is a master mind, and all the elements will hear his voice and gladly do his will. Two sturdy asses bind the will of man. Their names are fear and unbelief. When these are caught and turned aside, the will of man will know no bounds. Then man has but to speak, and it is done. And then the guests returned and sat about the board. Fear and unbelief are standing between us and knowing. They are pulling us away from knowing more truth about ourselves and God. When we follow this tug of fear and unbelief, we find ourselves knowing we went in a direction that doesn't serve us. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel as good as the other direction. Knowing that fact, being able to distinguish between feeling better and feeling worse, is knowing enough for us to change our directions and go back to exploring our own connections to the healing spirit, God. I'd like to end the service with a prayer. Father God, Mother God, Christ, the source and connection to all that is. Help us to know. Help us to be courageous enough to open up to knowing your presence in our lives. Open us up to know how to show your presence in our lives and in the lives of others. Help us to look past appearances in other people and see the Christ within them, and speak to, look to, admire, and relate to that holiness in them and the holiness in us. Thank you. It is done. Amen.